When Alabama plays football, first of all, is it the Auburn-Alabama game or Alabama-Auburn game?
Just the Iron Bowl.
Iron Bowl. There you go. I always say the Carolina-Clemson game.
Yeah, you don't...
Some people say Clemson-Carolina game.
I've been told that if you call it the, quote, Palmetto Bowl...
Oh, no, yeah, that's not...
Absolute
that's
not
heresy. No way is it.
It's not a thing.
Do you say you're from Bama?
Mm-mm.
Remember the David Allen Coe song, The Ride, where he says, this is where you get up, boy, I'm going back to Alabama. You don't go back to Alabama.
I do not. People say sometimes that they're going to Bama, the school.
Yeah.
I grew up calling them the Bams as a way to make fun of them.
Really?
Did
you call Auburn's the Barnes?
Yes.
Okay.
My dad calls them the Bams and the Barnes.
Okay.
But, yeah, I never say I'm from Bama. I say I'm from Alabama.
Okay. But the school... Like, the state is not Bama.
Right.
The school is Bama.
The school's Bama.
But do you refer to them as Bama, the team?
I usually say Alabama.
I do, too.
But Bama talking about the school is way better than talking about the state, in my opinion.
Okay. So, let's ask Josh Weiss about this.
Yeah, I want to hear what he has to say.
Good morning, J-Dub. Do you say Bama or do you say Alabama, Josh?
I would only say Bama if I'm talking about the football team, I think.
Okay. How about basketball? Baseball? That's like Alabama.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I got you.
And you talking about, you know, like rivalry games, you know, you said Carolina Clemson, I think. I don't know. I think I would always kind of do the order of the team that you said you're on first.
So you say Clemson Carolina game.
Other way around.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll buy that as well. Speaking of Bama, can we talk some Bama now? Can we talk some Georgia, Texas, Bama, Oklahoma, and Missouri now?
Sure.
I'll go in the order you sent them to me in. I'm going to tell you, Georgia is going to absolutely roll people this year. And they might be underdogs at Ole Miss. And they won't be underdogs at Alabama. But they're going to roll people this year. This team is ready in every way, shape, or form. You can attempt to talk me off that train, the Georgia train right now, but good luck, pal. What's the thoughts on the dogs?
Yes, the win total is either, depending on where you want to look at it, it's either 9.5 big juice to the over, 10.5 big juice to the under. So they're kind of telling you 10's the sweet spot, but I kind of think 10 is the floor. So I would definitely like that 9.5 to the over. Juice only matters if you lose there. But the 12 returning starters, they added 3 more from the portal. 8 in returning production. They're the youngest team in the country by average age, but a lot of those guys had a lot of experience last year. Very experienced offensive line. Obviously, the quarterback returns. They got depth at running back. You know, the one question mark on offense is probably wide receiver. Humphreys returns is kind of the leading returner. They lose Branch and Young to the draft. You know, they got Isaiah Cannon coming in from Georgia Tech. You know, so can you get somebody at wide receiver to kind of step up, help them stretch the field? You know, they'll probably be able to run the ball on anybody, maybe save for Oklahoma. But, yeah, defense looks stout, you know, maybe not quite 2021 level elite, but not far off from that. They added some depth pieces there to help in spots. You know, Williams from Oklahoma, Conley from Southern Cal, and obviously we know about Barnes from Clemson. He's probably going to start at nickel. You know, it's like the best secondary in the conference. That linebacker position is loaded like usual. You know, can they make some improvements there in the pass rush? Kind of one thing to watch there, you know, that kind of showed up in some games last year. But, I mean, a projected favorite in every game. You know, there are at least 9 games of the double-digit favorite, plus another one where they're just short of double digits but more than a touchdown favorite. You know, the road games are Arkansas, Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Bama. Very high floor. I think they win the conference. I'm not sure their ceiling is high enough to win the national championship, although they'll be in the mix there. But, yeah, I wouldn't talk you up Georgia at all. I think 10 is the floor. You know, they'd probably drop 1 along the way. I think it's more likely probably 11-1.
I think Elijah Griffin and Quintavious Johnson are going to definitely help that pass rush out. Wide receivers, I don't have an answer for you. I don't. I have defensive pass rush questions answered with those two monsters, but I don't have an answer for you on the other one. Texas, hey, there was a Cam Coleman taking off the practice field yesterday. I hadn't seen anything, any results of that, but Texas obviously went out and spent a bunch of money again in the NIL world and's got – I can make an argument that Texas has the best roster in the SEC, but they got Sarkisian and they don't have an identity the way that Georgia has. Any of those things fair?
Yeah, definitely. Fixed and returning production, obviously. Arch comes back. He seemed to kind of turn the corner last half of the year last year. And you added 10 Power 4 starters from the portal and obviously spent heavily to do so. And you mentioned Cam Coleman, two big running back additions, Smothers and Brown. Sark seems quite confident in this group. He's been, you know, chirping a little bit in the offseason. The offensive line was an issue for them last year. They suffered a lot of injuries. They couldn't run the ball. Obviously, we know Goosby, the left tackle, been dinged up a little bit in camp, but your reports are he's fine. Probably even be back for the first game. So, I mean, all the ingredients are there for this offense to be dynamic. But can they improve in the red zone? That's kind of been their Achilles heel, bugaboo for a number of years now. They make the defensive switch to Muschamp. Because you think that's probably going to be a more aggressive defense. My one question there would be the secondary. If he's aggressive, as Muschamp likes to put it, and puts those corners, playing some press man at times, they do lose three starters from last year. So, can that are the replacements going to be good enough to play the style of defense, that he likes? But, the big difference, I mean, the win total's the same, 9.5, but Texas is juiced to the under a little bit. Big difference, obviously, is the schedule. They're probably going to be favored 10 to 11 games. Depending on how the Ohio State game shakes out. They get Tennessee, LSU, A&M on the road, obviously Oklahoma on a neutral site, and Ohio State, Ole Miss, and Florida at home. There's more opportunities to trip up. They have, whereas Georgia, is a double-digit favorite in, 9 games or so. Texas has, kind of 4 games where they're a favorite of less than a touchdown. Tennessee, Oklahoma, LSU, and A&M, and plus the game against Ohio State, which they're probably going to open as a short dog. The number seems kind of about right on, but if this team goes 9-3 again, somehow misses the playoff, you get a little hot seat talk there for Sark. This is kind of a prove it year for him with as good as this roster looks like.
All right, a couple things quickly. I trust Kirby more than I trust Sarkisian. Number two, the only two position units where Phil Steele does not have Texas in the top 15 in the country, you mentioned defensive back and offensive line. Neither are terrible. But neither are major concerns, but those are definitely weaknesses for sure. And the final point there, Sarkisian is on the hot seat, and you're going, well, he made the playoffs once, blah, blah. But the fact is that they're paying $45 to $50 million, too, and they're not going to sit around and just watch that happen. Alabama, I am not high on for the first time, the first team we're going to cover today that I think has major question marks at a lot of areas.
Yeah, I know you want to chime in on this one. 8.5 is the win total. 90th in returning production. Defense does look like it'll be pretty solid, especially in the secondary. Offense, I think there's issues. Top 9 players from last year in terms of snap count are gone, either to the NFL or a couple of them went to Texas A&M. We know about the quarterback battle. Seems like Russell has the highest upside, and his mobility would seem to be a plus, which I think they're going to need because the offensive line looks like a big weakness to me. They lose 4 from last year's team that off that starting offensive line that are now in the NFL. And even though that group wasn't great, they couldn't run the ball. This group has a projected somewhere around 30 FBS starts, so not very experienced there. Has Ryan Williams, Ryan Coleman Williams, has he exited witness protection, will he show up this year? I don't know. The whole vibes around Alabama just don't seem very good. They'll be a dog to Georgia. At LSU, they'll be a dog. And it's possibly at Tennessee. That's kind of a coin flip. They'll be a short favorite at home against A&M. There's just a lot of there is some favorable parts of the schedule, but I just don't have a lot of trust in this kind of overhaul on offense to have any kind of confidence in them being that kind of third team back in the playoff.
In Phil Steele's magazine unit rankings, Alabama 38th best quarterback situation, 41st best running back room, 61st best offensive line room for a team that ran the ball for 104 yards a game last year. Don't like anything about that at all. A team we talked about already this morning before we got on with us, Brent Venables gets a raise and a contract extension at Oklahoma. Thoughts here?
Yeah, I think their roster is better. I mean, they're 16th in returning production. It's just the big thing is the second year in this offensive system. Mateer is healthy. Reports are he's been working on and been improved his footwork in the offseason. They've improved the running back and wide receiver positions. You know, they return four or five offensive linemen that started 6-plus games last year. That was a very inexperienced group that was kind of thrown to the fire. They do lose four, I think it was, off the defense of the NFL, but it still looks like a really, elite group. They did lose a few depth pieces, off that defense. I lost Marcus Strong to Clemson. So maybe they don't have the overall depth on the defense, but they stay healthy there. Obviously, you trust Brent to have those guys ready. But the big thing is the schedule. I mean, the win total is 7.5. Within the first six games, they play Michigan, Georgia, and Texas all the way from home. Might be a dog in all three. Michigan is kind of a coin flip. They may close as a short favorite, but nevertheless, they also project as around the field goal or less favorite at Florida. And then their games against Ole Miss and A&M. I like the team. I think the offense can take a step. But they've got to find a way, in those first they need – Michigan's really a big swing game. They need to beat Michigan. And then even if you lose to Georgia and Texas, 3-2, I think it's manageable. You could get through 9-3 and maybe get one of those last at-large playoff spots.
I have a few questions on the offensive line. Last year they didn't run it, ran it for 118 a game. You got to run the football better. I've got questions at wide receiver as well. Phil Steele's got him 47th, the best wide receiver unit in the country. But defense, maybe the best defense in America. We'll see. Finally, Missouri. What are we thinking about Eli and the next Eli unit he puts out here?
I think they take a big step back. 76 returning production. New quarterback Austin Simmons, not a fan. Downgrade there. New offensive coordinator Chip Lindsey. I think that's a downgrade. Recent offenses at Michigan, North Carolina, Central Florida, not that good. Running back position is strong. But a little question how hard he recovers after the gunshot injury. I think the offensive line group looks to take a pretty big step back. So if you stack the box, slow down the run game, how do they score? They got one of the top four pass catchers back. Defense, that was a talented defense last year. They lose 11 of the top 13 in snap counts. Four of them drafted. Four more of them, signed NFL free agent contracts. Two other transfers to P4 schools. It kind of looks like they're relying on a lot of unproven P4 transfers. If you just look at last year's schedule, their wins were Central Arkansas, Kansas, Louisiana, UMass, South Carolina, Auburn in double overtime, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. Not exactly a murderer's row. Two of their losses last year, A&M and Oklahoma, they play again. But their other two losses last year, Bama and Vandy, now get replaced with Texas and Georgia. So schedule is tougher. Win total at 6.5. Under is even money. I think this is another one of those teams that gives me a little bit of vibe like maybe a little bit like South Carolina last year, where now they're not ranked that high in the preseason. They're in the bottom part of the top 25, but I don't think this team makes a bowl. I think under 6.5.
Dang. They are 16-0. I'm sure I'm right saying this. They're 16-0 against unranked teams the last 2 years, and 2-7 against ranked teams. And this schedule this year is different because they've got A&M at Ole Miss, Texas at Georgia and Oklahoma. I agree with you. I certainly like that. I love it.
And there's something like 11 or 12 and 4 and won 4 games these last, you know, 2 or 3 years. Yeah. That worm will turn to.
Good stuff. Big Ten maybe next week? Final week of non-games?
Yeah, sounds good.
We'll save the nation's best conference for last. I love it. Have a great weekend. You're down in Charleston. Stifling heat, man. Stifling heat. So stay inside down there.
All right. Have a good weekend, guys.
Thank you, Josh. Got to take a short break. We will come back. When we do, we'll have our ReedyLandCo.com's hunting and fishing report, and I'll give you a heat index update for Charleston. Whew. Much more after this.
The countdown is on. 15 days until Clemson Tiger football. Presented by Ingles. Ingles. Low prices. Love the savings.
Gina looks left side, comes back right. We're going down the middle looking for more. Can't get it to the two. Into the end zone. Touchdown. A strike from Gina DeBoer. From
105.5. 97.5.
The Roar.
Where every day is game day.
It is here now. Football season here, so you're going to look for a place to stay. Let's get Lakeside Lodge. You're looking for a place to eat. Let's get Lakeside Lodge. You're coming in town on Fridays. Friday nights rocks out there. Great place to watch the games on Saturdays as well. Sunday NFL games, Sunday brunches, a little post-churchy in town for that. Let's stay. Let's get the condo tail part of it. Let's buy your next condominium there as well. And see if they can help you out there. With all those amenities, we're talking about the amphitheater. We're talking about the big tailgating grounds they have right there on the water. Beautiful pool, beautiful setup, outside dining as well. Go by and see our great friends, Lakeside Lodge. The ownership, how you can make money when you don't have or when you're not staying at your condo and rent that out. It's a great deal. Condo Tell, what Steve and Leighton, the good folks, came up with there. It's our good friends, Lakeside Lodge, Clemson.com.
Loud, loyal, and locked in.
The home from Louis Gazzard, Hoax. Anyway, so no Cam Coble stuff there. Hey, Carolina Flooring Specialist, coming back from Charleston yesterday, I look over in the left-hand lane, and there's a Carolina Flooring Specialist van. They do Wild Dunes, Kiowa, Sullivan's Island, Mount Pleasant. They do garage floors all down there, too. So I hitched up and just said, all right, we're following this train home. Good to see Carolina Flooring Specialist. You're a garage flooring specialist. And if you're listening in Charleston, I encourage somebody to do down there, let's let these folks come to your garage down there as well. So set it up. No obligation phone call. They'll do a terrific job for you. This polysporadic, epoxy-based, professional flooring, it's gonna completely change your garage, add value to your home at a much more affordable price than you could ever imagine. 10-minute, no-obligation phone call, 404-8158. Call them today, 864-404-8158. The segment brought to my great friends at Reedy Land Co. talking some hunting and fishing, and Jonathan Monch checks in on a Friday. Good morning, Jonathan. How you doing?
Good morning, Mickey. I'm doing well.
Awesome. Am I right? It is deer season in the low country, and everybody's all happy, and we're talking deer and all everything we need about deer and antlers and everything there. Is this a great time of year for folks that love to go out and do this very passionate thing called deer hunting?
It's that time of the year again, Mickey, especially in the low country. Everybody's already getting out in the woods. This time of year is a little special because, you know, most folks, when they think about deer hunting, you're thinking about putting on your jackets and your long pants. And I would say right now we're still in shorts weather. So if you got you some camouflage shorts, that's a good time to keep putting those on until we get a little cooler in the deer season, and won't be too much longer, and it'll be here in the upstate as well. But this morning, want to touch on a topic that a lot of people just aren't aware of, or maybe just don't know too much about, is the velvet on deer antlers. And you know, the idea behind this is that when the deer antlers begin to grow, usually beginning around April of every year, it's this real soft, velvety style shield, sheath, if you will, that grows over these antlers. And believe it or not, it actually has blood vessels and nerves and all that. It keeps the nutrients and allows that antler to grow. That antler is technically a bone and actually one of the fastest growing bones known to man. And as that bone is growing, it's providing those nutrients. And once we get to around this time of year, a little, sometimes depending on the buck's genetics, a little sooner, sometimes a little bit later into September, but that velvet will actually start to naturally peel off, that blood flow stops to that velvet, so there's no more nutrients once that antler's fully matured, fully grown for the year, and it will actually just peel away. So it's a very interesting a way that Mother Nature has for those big bucks to grow those antlers throughout the year.
All right. Can I assume, though, that I know patterns of where they are and all that, once they lose those antlers, is that something we should have been paying attention to and knowing where those are and traffic patterns, I guess? Or is that – we have cameras now. Do we need to still go on foot and try to find some of these old ones later, you know, maybe earlier in the year?
Yeah, that's a great thing. So, you know, when it comes to actually picking up the sheds themselves in the early spring or, you know, late winter when those fall off, it's a great time to kind of keep track of that. I know some folks, they, you know, really, really target a specific buck. If you can, you know, even if you have a smaller piece of land, you know, working with your neighbors to be able to manage quality deer and not just shooting it just because you see it and being able to work together. If you've got a bigger piece of property, it's usually a little easier to kind of manage your bucks. If you can, you know, collect the sheds and you can, and you know it's from that specific deer, like you just said, if you've got a trail camera, you kind of keep an eye on it, on the deer, that specific deer. I know some folks, they actually try to keep the original set every year and specifically for that deer. So it's very interesting and neat to see how that deer's antlers grow a little bit bigger every year.
Two really dumb questions. I asked this occasionally, I forgot what the answer was. What do the deer, the number of points, what does that tell us? It's not necessarily size. It is a correlation, maybe not a direct correlation, but can we have a small 8-point? Can we have a big 4-point, whatever? What are the points on there? What does that tell us about age or size?
Yeah. So I would say it has more to do with the genetics of the deer itself than it does the age. Generally speaking, to get an accurate age, you do what's called the jawbone test, and you'll have a biologist or a researcher will actually look at the jawbone of the deer, and it will determine its age. But there's a lot, I would say the overwhelming majority comes down to genetics. You could have a older, very mature buck that's only a 6-point, and you could have a very young buck that's already a 12-point, you know, and so, you know, it's not necessarily that the points tell that the deer is older or younger, more so has to do with the genetics and the environment and the stress factors around that deer as it's growing.
Finally, this is maybe the dumbest one ever. Are they always even? I always hear, man, he was a 4-point, 6-point, 8-point, 10-point. Do we ever get 3 points and 5 points and 7 points and 9 points?
You sure can. So, depending on how unique or not the deer is, and once again, going back to the genetics, you can have basically two classifications of deer when it comes to trophy antler racks. You have what's called typical or non-typical. So a lot of times what's referred to as non-typical is actually one of those antlers, one of those points growing, instead of going up, one of those will actually go down. They'll have an additional point going down. That's known as a drop time. So that's a very rare, very sought-after rack or deer by hunters that are looking for something that's a little special, and that'll certainly go into some type of trophy book here in South Carolina if someone were to be able to harvest one like that. But, yeah, to your point, Mickey, it isn't always just, you know, 3-3 on each side or 4-4. It could definitely be, you know, 3-2 or 4-3. I would say most of the time it is even, but sometimes you do have one that is growing just a little bit different than the rest.
All right, John, I got to get out. I got a hard break here. I will tell people, ReedyLandCo.com. Stop by, see these good folks, some great properties. I can't thank you enough, man. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you guys next week. ReedyLandCo.com for all the best. Hour number 3 right after this.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson, Greenville Anderson, WAHD-AM 1560, Cowpens, 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar. The countdown is on. 15 days until Clemson Tiger football. Presented by Ingles. Ingles. Low prices. Love the savings.
Gina looks left side, comes back right. We're going down the middle looking for more. Kicked into the two.
From 105.5, 97.5,
The Roar,
where every day is game day.
Go Got a Stripe the Valley coming up. Find your section when you get your Georgia Southern tickets and find out what section you're going to be in, what color shirt you're going to wear, and get that shirt over at Tiger Sports Shop, Tiger Sports at TigerSports.com. The Lululemon. I was in Charleston. Every woman on earth, if you live in Charleston, you have to wear Lululemon. Well, if you're in Clemson for game days, for workout stuff, for everyday sauced up Lululemon apparel, there is apparel as well. And all those collections, and I say the collections, you know what I'm talking about, those awesome Nike collections. We've got the Comfort Tee collections. We've got all of those throwback type stuff. They've got it all. Everything you need at Clemson. Tiger Sports, TigerSports.com, College Avenue, Tiger Boulevard. And the countdown clock tells us Clemson and LSU 15 days, 11 hours, 28 minutes, and 41 seconds. 50 years now, TigerSports.com.
We make traffic a little more tolerable. The Upstate Sports Leader.
That's right.
The Roar.
This is Dr. Ted Swan with Tiger Diagnostics. We always put patients first.